Thanks so much for being with us, Senator. Can you start off by explaining what this report is and what you're calling for?
Well, Amy, it's good to be with you. This was a report conducted by General Fenzel and his team. He's the U.S. Security Coordinator for Israel and the Palestinian Authorities. And he conducted an extensive review of what happened in the killing of Shireen. I should emphasize that his report is not an independent investigation. And he was not able to conduct an independent investigation because, as you indicated, Israeli authorities have not cooperated with the government. That's information I've received from the State Department. In other words, requests to deny the soldier in question or other members of the IDF unit have been denied. So it's not an independent investigation, but it does shed very important light on the conduct of the IDF unit in question on the day of the shooting of Shireen, and also more broadly reaches conclusions about the conduct of other IDF units in the West Bank. And it's my view that the report should be declassified because it is important to getting to accountability in the shooting death of Shireen Abu Akleh. And I believe its release will help save lives going forward.
So what has the Biden administration said about releasing this document? And what process does it have to go through?
Well, they have not yet responded to the request to release the document. I should say that in this particular case, the final classification process has not yet been completed. The overall report that I reviewed, after much insistence, is classified top secret. But it has actually not gone through its final classification process. So we are very focused right now on making the case that it's important to release the findings of this document to ensure a greater accountability in the shooting death of this American citizen and journalist. It includes important information on the killing of Shireen, and because I believe that it will reveal additional information that would hopefully result in more accountability for IDF units on the West Bank, something that President Biden has called for and something that Secretary Blinken has called for.
Senator Van Hollen, how does this report differ from the U.S. Security Coordinator's report from last year, which you were very critical of?
Well, as it turns out, last year's report was not really a report. It was just a very cursory finding, a conclusion based on a very preliminary review, not of independent information, but information that have been provided by the Israeli government, by the Palestinian Authority. So it turned out that there was no real report there when we asked for it. So now the USSC has conducted an extensive review of all the analyses that have been done and reached certain judgments about what happened that day, and certain judgments, again, about the conduct of other IDF units. And I just think it's really important that this report, which is not a paragraph like the original, you know, findings, but an 8-page report, I believe it should be released.
And why is this report classified as top secret in the first place?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think that the findings are clearly critical of the conduct of the IDF unit in question. And again, this is why Secretary Blinken has also called upon the government of Israel to review its rules of engagement on the West Bank. And he's been rebuffed. In other words, the government of Israel told him to go take a hike. And that's another reason it's really important that this report be released.
I wanted to play for you Shireen Abu Akleh's niece. I interviewed her in December. This is Lina Abu Akleh.
We were actually very encouraged by the news that the FBI will be investigating. This is something we've been calling on from day one since Shireen was a U.S. citizen, and it's the duty of the United States to investigate any crimes carried out by a foreign army outside towards against a U.S. citizen. And we stand ready to support the U.S. in conducting this independent and thorough investigation, following all the evidence where it leads up and down the chain of command. And we've seen how Israeli army is unable and unwilling to investigate themselves. That's why it's really important for the FBI to be investigating. And we also hope that the United States, the FBI, will employ all tools necessary to get the answers that we've been asking regarding the killing of Shireen, but also to lead to accountability and justice. That's what we want. We want there to be accountability. We want there to be justice.
So that's Lina Abu Akleh, the niece of Shireen Abu Akleh, who was killed on May 11, 2022, as she covered Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in occupied West Bank. Shireen is a U.S. citizen. Shireen is a Palestinian-American journalist. Senator Chris Van Hollen, what obligation does the United States have when it believes another state, in this case an ally, Israel, has killed a U.S. citizen?
Well, it's my belief that the United States has an absolute obligation to get to the bottom of what happened, to hold the individuals accountable, or in this case, potentially the IDF unit accountable. And that is something that we should do when you have the wrongful killing of a U.S. citizen. Look, you know, President Biden has been eloquent about calling for the release of U.S. Journalists who are currently detained around the world. He's been eloquent about trying to get to the bottom of what happened to Austin Tice, as have I in both those other cases, determined to try to make sure that American citizens and journalists are protected. That same protection needs to extend to American citizen and journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. And that is the obligation of the U.S. government, and it is a still unfulfilled obligation.
The FBI has also opened an investigation into the case. Do you know anything about this investigation, Senator?
Well, my understanding is the FBI investigation is ongoing, although the FBI will not publicly confirm whether or not the investigation is ongoing. But my understanding is the FBI investigators have talked to some people. But you raised a very important point, which is that the FBI will also ultimately require the cooperation of the government of Israel to be able to make any final conclusions with respect to an independent investigation, right? The investigation done by the U.S. security coordinator was not an independent investigation because he was not allowed to interview witnesses, including members of the IDF unit in question. And the FBI, in my view, is going to have a very difficult time making independent judgments as to exactly what happened that day without the cooperation of the government of Israel. And that is another reason it's important that the Biden administration press harder.
Are you going to demand that at least the FBI, even if they don't have access on Israel's side, to the Palestinian journalists who were there that day, one of whom was shot, who were not contacted for this report?
Well, the FBI certainly should be interviewing all the witnesses, including the witnesses that you just mentioned, Al Jazeera journalists that were on the ground and others. Yes, the FBI should be doing all of that.
And did the U.S. Security Coordinator's report shed any light on Israeli claims of crossfire, since video footage and eyewitnesses dispute this? And also, since you read it, did the report confirm whether or not there is more body camera footage from the IDF unit from the moments around the shooting?
Well, I can't get into the details of the report because it is still classified. But let me just say the conclusions of the report, I believe, if made public, would result in saving lives. And I do believe would bring more accountability to this case, because that does shed very important light on the conduct and misconduct of the IDF unit in question. So this is exactly why I think it's important that the report be declassified.
Let me ask a final question. The first USSC report found no reason to believe the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh was intentional. Does this new report come to a different conclusion?
Well, this new report cannot shed any new light on the question of intentionality, because the USSC was denied access to the witnesses. You know, it's my view that you can only get to the state of mind of individuals by interviewing the individual who pulled the trigger, as well as those that were immediately around that soldier. And so long as that access is denied, you can't shed any more new light on that question.
Senator Chris Van Hollen, I want to thank you for being with us. Democratic Senator from Maryland, calling for the release of the U.S. government report on the shooting death of the Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. Coming up, we go to Montana, where calls are growing for authorities to investigate the death of Micah Westwolf, a 22-year-old indigenous woman who died after being hit by a car driven by a white nationalist. We'll speak with Micah's parents. Stay with us. Michael Westwolf playing a ukulele. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Mimi Goodman. This week, community members in Montana held a series of Justice to Be Seen walks to demand justice for many indigenous people killed or hit by vehicles there along Highway 93. They're focusing on Micah, on Micah Westwolf, 22-year-old indigenous woman struck and killed in March by a driver as she was walking home along the highway in the early morning hours. The driver was identified as Sunny White, a suspected white nationalist whose two children who were in the car are reportedly named Aryan and Nation. They were in the car at the time of the crash. Sunny White has not been charged in connection with Micah's death. Micah Westwolf was a member of Blackfeet tribe, also Diné, Cree, and Klamath. She was an avid athlete and poet. This is Micah speaking in 2016 about graduating from Big Sky High School.
My name is Micah Westwolf. I'm a student at Missoula Big Sky High School and a member of the Blackfeet Nation. I am also Navajo, Cree, and Klamath. Earning a high school diploma would mean that I could get into a good college or help my people and get a good job. My mom helps me a lot because she always helps me out with my work when I'm struggling, or she always gets after me to do my work and always tells me to try my hardest and tells me that I can do anything I want if I just put my mind to it. My plans after graduation is to go to the SKC College. What I want to do is there's a program there that is like you can be a dentist assistant, and that's what I want to do.
Micah Westwolf speaking in 2016. Her life was tragically cut short in March. And for more on the calls for justice in her death, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Erica Shelby, a tribal legal advocate for missing, murdered indigenous women. And we begin in Arley, Montana, with Micah's parents, her mother, Carissa Heavy Runner, and father, Kevin Howard. Our deepest condolences for your loss. Can you tell us about your daughter, Micah? What kind of person she was, what were her aspirations, and why you're walking now, why you're on this walk to demand justice?
Hi. Yes, Micah was a very loud, curious, energetic, very intelligent, active little girl until she was, you know, a young woman. She read a lot. She did a lot of writing. She got to travel all the way to Nepal. She had a love for being outdoors. She wanted to hike everywhere, camp in the mountains, travel. And she wanted to go back to Nepal and climb the mountains there. She fell in love with it there, and she danced powwows before she could walk, and I had to help her. And she just was a strong, intelligent Native woman. And I know she would be right here if I wasn't in this situation for fighting for justice for my daughter and it was for someone else. She would be right beside me. She was a little activist.
We're doing this walk. We want Lake County to investigate these kind of crimes. Something that in the past they haven't done. So if they're not going to do it, we're gonna do it for them, and we're gonna force them to do it.
And Erica Shelby, you're in Washington, D.C. Explain what you believed happened. Was this an unintentional car crash, just a tragedy? Or why you believe that Micah Westwolf may have been deliberately run down?
Well, when we spoke with James Lapotka, the county attorney, he explained to us that, you know, the talks had come back on Sonny. He had also taken it from Micah, which we still don't know why. And she had trace amounts of fentanyl and meth, nanograms.
That was Sonny?
There was no skid marks, no brake marks. Yeah, Sonny White. And so...
The driver.
The driver. And so, I mean, it's not regulated like THC or alcohol, where you can give it a DUI at a certain percentage. So how we understood it is it's legal to have these in your system and be on the road. But if they're trying to tell us that that wasn't a factor in her driving, well, then it can only leave that this was intentional.
And what does skid marks have to do with anything? The fact that there weren't skid marks, what does that say to you, Erica?
You know when you hit a deer. You know when you... We live in Montana. We hit deer. You know when you hit something. And the fact that she didn't brake, that she didn't swerve, that there's no sign of that, tells me, it indicates to me that at least it needs further investigation. And he can go off of, you know, the county attorney Lapotka said, you know, that nothing indicated that it was intentional to him. That's very superficial. And he's explained to us that he doesn't make determinations until he gets final reports. So how is he making determinations like that?
And what are you doing in Washington, Erica Shelby? What are your plans in bringing this case to the nation's capital?
Carissa and Kevin started this walk. And at the beginning, we didn't know how big it was. And then we got there and there was so many people and everybody has the same story about the same players, the same agencies, the same police, the same attorneys. And it's enough is enough. And they've been alienated and they're isolated and they're made to look crazy. And they eventually burn out. This system, it breaks us down. Where they're supposed to serve and protect, they're victim blaming. They're breaking us down. They're over-criminalizing us. We're overrepresented in prisons. We're overrepresented in the missing persons cases. We're overrepresented in the murdered cases. We're only 5% of the state population, but in 2021, we were 30% of the missing people's population. So something has to change. And I'm here to get the attention of the people in D.C., Tester, Daines, Murkowski, Schatz, everybody on that Senate Committee for Indian Affairs. The president. Everybody. He was the one who supported VAWA, who wrote VAWA, who got VAWA in there, the Violence Against Women Act. He made sure Indigenous women were included. Now we need him now. He spoke about the MMIW crisis at the State of the Union. He needs to come now and step up and see what's going on our res.
Chris and Kevin, I want to give you the last
word. It's happening on other reses, too.
I want to give you the last word as the parents of Micah. You are on the last day of the Micah Matters Walk. If you can talk about the significance of ending at the steps of the Lake County Courthouse. We just have about a minute.
Yes. For me personally, and I imagine for everyone else, it's going to say a lot. Us walking from Arlie all the way to the outside of the courthouse, because we want to hold them accountable. They need to step up. They need to hear us and see us and the other families, hear their stories and the frustration, and not only them, but the world, to listen to our stories and feel our pain, see our pain, that we are trying to make a difference and change and hold those in charge accountable.
Lake County has a long history of corruption and an unfair, blaming of Native Americans, and it's got to be fair and equal. So we're going to hold Lake County accountable. We're going to ensure that the Montana Highway Patrol is accountable. They have a long history of not investigating crimes against Native. If it was reversed, if it's a Native on white crime, those are heavily investigated, heavily enforced. So there's a disparity there that needs to end. So that's our goal.
Well, I want to thank you both. And again, our condolences to you both, Kevin Howard and Carissa Heavyrunner, parents of Micah Westwolf. And I want to thank Erica Shelby, tribal legal advocate for missing, murdered Indigenous women. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we end today's show, looking at the death of Olympic track and field star Tori Bowie and an often ignored issue, the Black maternal health crisis. Tori was just 32 years old when she died at home last month. The Orange County, Florida medical examiner reported she was 8 months pregnant and in labor when she died, most likely from eclampsia, a complication of pregnancy. Tori Bowie, who is Black, won bronze, silver, and gold medals in the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro. The CDC recently marked Black Maternal Health Week in April, noting Black women are three times more likely to die from pregnancy complications than white women. We're joined now by Dr. Carla Williams, board-certified OBGYN, who opted to have home births herself, an OBGYN, after her first hospital birthing experience. She's also a birth and postpartum doula. Thank you so much for being with us. Can you talk about the significance of this enormous disparity between white women and Black women dying in or before or right after childbirth, Dr. Williams?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's incredible the disparities that you've mentioned and just how Black women are dying throughout the country, in New York State, in New York City especially, where it's up to 12 times more than white women. And it goes to show just that these patients, these women, their concerns aren't necessarily being heard. There's bias and there's racism within our medical institutions, and something needs to change drastically.
I mean, I wanted to read Bowie's Olympic teammate Tiana Bartoletta's tweet, which is just stunning, after learning of her death. She said, as of June 2023, three of the four members of Team USA's 4x100-meter relay team, who ran the second fastest time in history and brought home the gold medal, have nearly died or did die in childbirth. We deserve better. Hashtag Black Maternal Health Crisis. Dr. Williams.
All right. It's unacceptable, you know. It's saddening and it's maddening at the same time that that this is happening to Black and Brown women, and that essentially nothing really can save you. You can be extremely well educated. You can be quote unquote high class. You can have all the money in the world. You can be, you know, record artists and Olympic medal winning athletes, and really nothing can spare you.
And I mean, the fact, Dr. Williams, that you're an OBGYN, that you yourself had two births at home after your first hospital experience, why? And how do you relate that to the disparities we're talking about?
Well, what made me make that decision was having a bad experience with the birth of my first child in the hospital and experiencing discrimination within that stay. So when that happened to me, even being an OBGYN at that time, and feeling like I was getting subpar care and that my child was, I felt like definitely moving forward out of hospital birth was what I wanted to choose for myself in order to have the best outcome. So when I think about that, I think that every woman, every birthing person deserves to have an experience where, you know, they're taken care of, they're listened to, their concerns are validated, and their best interest is at mind.
What is it that doctors are missing? What is it that hospitals are not doing correctly? And what does this have to do with recognizing the pain of Black women?
I feel like what they're failing to do is listen to Black women. I feel like they're not listening to their complaints. I feel like they're taking things too lightly. I feel like they're intervening too much when maybe it's not necessary. I feel like there's not enough collaboration in the care with, for example, midwives that could be taking care of low-risk pregnancies and giving them more one-on-one attention that that those patients need. I feel like there has to be more... more work needs to be done in order to take care of the birthing population the way that it should be, where, you know, high risk pregnancies and whatnot is taken care of by more specialized providers, and we're taking care of low risk pregnancies with midwives.
I want to end with your words on Instagram, Dr. Williams. You wrote, "We need to start measuring outcomes on more than just being alive. That's the baseline. The goal is empowered and healthy." Dr. Carla Williams, OBGYN, birth and postpartum doula, had two of her children at home after her first hospital experience. As we continue to cover the issue of the disparity in the lives of Black and white women, mothers, that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Did you know the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, aka SFPERG, has been leading social and environmental activism on campus for 40 years? SFPERG is student activism, by students, for students. Do you have a vision for a brighter future? Are you passionate about changing the world? Visit us at www.sfperg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about getting involved today.